Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Mark Schmid, IT and networking expert, NPA board director, MPA journal publisher, and chief editor. Mark, thank you for coming in today and sharing your deep experiences with our audience.
Thanks, Stephen. Not sure how deep of an experience I have, but I'm happy to share the experiences I have over the last almost 30 years in IT.
Mark, congratulations. You just received a special global award for outstanding service, the Top of the Mark Volunteer Award. Can you tell us more about the award and how you feel about receiving this special honor?
The Network Professional Association seeks to recognize professionals in the field of IT for contributions that promote the ideals within the NPA. We have a code of ethics. And I believe any member of the NPA tries to honor those ethics. The awards seek out individuals who exemplify those ethics and promote professionalism. I was very surprised and deeply honored to have been nominated and received the award. A friend of mine a long time ago told me that gratitude is an action word. So I love my career. I love the work that I've been doing my whole life. And gratitude is something that you need to give back. So I don't really see it as a burden. To me, it's just an expression of my gratitude when I do things like volunteer and, like writing the article for Castanet. That's an unpaid position, but I think it helps. I get good feedback and response from, people in business world. So it's been good.
So Mark, you are the publisher and chief editor of the MPA Journal. What are some of your highlights from your work on the journal?
I like that question. I wasn't sure what I was getting into when I started editing the NPA journal. But I think for me that the two most significant things that I've sort of come across is the number of organizations like GITCA and SIPS and, there's dozens of professional organizations working in the background to develop standards, professionalism, and provide resources for professionals. It's really the scope of it is amazing, and much more than I thought when I started looking into this 10 years ago, it's good to see. The other thing that really has been amazing is the people that are involved in IT. We see a lot of stuff on television with the wildly successful individuals who have become billionaires, but reading your interviews that we publish in the NPJ and just in researching articles or looking into organization, some of the people involved in IT and what they've developed and the research that happens in that. Like, that's really been amazing. I've spent hours on the computer reading about some people. It's fascinating.
You're a longtime leader within the MPA. Can you share with us some of your leadership lessons?
Sure. Leadership has been probably, I would say, the most difficult skill that I've learned. I have a reputation for being very emotional, very passionate about professionalism. And I would say to the point where in some cases I've hurt my reputation. I remember, in one, emotional outburst, I wasn't really proud of my behavior and I was talking to a friend of mine and his simple comment was, he said, that wasn't very professional. And I realized I needed to change. So, I've kind of, in the last few years particularly, really tried to change my style of leadership and look to change. And I've been really fortunate. I have a great bunch of people that I work with that are very patient with me. And, and I tend to be demanding and arrogant when I get emotional. But leadership isn't about hammering people into submission. Leadership has really opened my eyes, to what an amazing experience it is to accomplish something as a group rather than working as an individual. Most of my career, I've worked on my own, small business, single IT guy in a small company, or, you know, working for a customer as their single point of responsibility for IT. And so it's been really rewarding, and it's wonderful to be able to mentor some of the new guys that are coming up and also learn. Like, it's a two-way street. That's I think that's the part that's really changed me the most, is the opportunity to work with other people and see the changes in myself, right? It's a lot of fun. I really like where I'm at in my career right now.
Now, can you tell us more about the NPA organization and why IT professionals should get involved?
The NPA, for me, has always been about our code of ethics. It's where I'm passionate. It's important to stand for something. Otherwise, we tend to stand for anything. There's a big difference between being a technician and being a professional. I've always tried to sort of promote some ideals and some beliefs, right? That we work for the client. It's not about making a profit. I mean, profit obviously is important, but in the end, it's our clients who have to be profitable, and we have to present the best solutions and let them make the choices that they need to make. You know, and it's also really important. One of the things, I don't remember the line in the code of ethics, but it's also important to understand your limitation. With the rapid changes in technology, it's very easy to become, arrogant or conceited about knowledge. And, you really constantly need to evaluate what you know about a solution and be open to new ideas. So.
Now, Mark, you're a networking expert and acknowledged as such. What are your top lessons and solutions?
It's important to get an understanding of technology. There are a lot of knowledge bases and manuals available, but really you need to get beyond an understanding of the technology. There are specialists. There's a lot of information about. I've never really had a desire to master a piece of technology. For me, what's always been important is to understand what the technology can provide and then work with clients to incorporate it at whatever level they're at, right? I think another point is, like, I work very hard to understand a client's needs. I don't have to be an expert on their business or their, whether they're producing something or whether they're providing a service, but by having an understanding of what they do, I can take my knowledge on technology and help them improve their businesses or their processes, you know. I guess another area, I've always been a bit conservative. I find cutting-edge technology is a little less reliable than solutions that have been around for a while. So it's important to balance what you're doing. Often I find that when I get involved with a company that's very innovative, very cutting edge, you end up with some frustration. You know, you're working on new things, you're experimenting a little bit, you've got some disruption. And when you have a lot of cutting edge technology, it can really adversely affect the business. And clients can be overwhelmed by the change. So it's important to have a really good balance. And I think probably the most important lesson I've learned is how important stability is. I think it's the most important thing that we provide to clients. If you don't have a stable solution, the client's going to lose faith. They're not going to trust what's in place, and they're not going to trust future solutions. You have to provide stable solutions. They just can't fail regularly, right? So it's, stability is probably critical, right? Nobody remembers that the network was up for 7 hours today. Everybody remembers it was down for one. So,
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned this whole idea of stability. I'm going to share a bit of a story. I've got a major sort of desktop server kind of computer that failed this year. I bought two new computers. Both of them have failed this year, or I've had major problems. And in fact, I spent the last 35 hours trying to rebuild one of my systems. And then I bought a new phone, and installing the software that's on the PC side, that software wouldn't install. So I this whole idea of stability, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's a hot point for me right now after spending just weeks and weeks trying to manage all of these failures of systems. So I can understand this whole concept of stability. That leads into my next question. What are your special technical tips?
Well, yeah, that's a tough one. I tend to be more a jack of all trades rather than a specialist, but I think somebody somewhere knows a solution to the problem and they have a quick solution, and research has been really critical in solving problems. So that's kind of one tip. I've seen so many clients frustrated by IT personnel constantly coming back to fix the same problem. So isolating the problem is the first step in the solution. Often we come in, we think we know what's wrong, we fix it, and then we go on. And then you just go back, you end up going back and back. I've picked up new clients from competitors in a number of cases because of that. The most cost-effective solution for me has always been in the middle. It's usually the most reliable as well. So, you know, if you're pricing out workstations, the sort of the mid-range system is probably the best deal, and it's most reliable. If you're pricing out servers, same sort of thing. I always take the time to make sure that the user tests whatever I put in. You know, that's really difficult these days because of the volume of work. Where I work is very, very busy. And, it's important to take the time to wait for them to test things. Because if they test it and it fails, you haven't done anything, you know, you haven't done anything in their eyes, right? You just wasted a bunch of time. I think another really important tip for me is a second set of eyes. I have a funny story too. I walked into, the shop where I used to work quite a few years ago, and, two technicians had a computer on the bench, and they couldn't figure out why the keyboard wasn't working. And, everything else seemed to be working okay. The mouse was working okay. They couldn't figure out why the keyboard was working. And, as I was going by, he says, have a look at this, right? And so I went over and I realized in the tangle of cords that they were typing on the wrong keyboard. The keyboard that was plugged into the system was over to the side, and what they were typing on was not the right keyboard. And, you know, and they laughed, right? Because they'd been, you know, 10, 15 minutes, they'd been sitting there trying to figure out what was wrong with the keyboard. And, you know, and so the second set of eyes has always been really important, right? I think another technical tip is if the customer doesn't understand what's wrong, you haven't finished solving the problem. You know, it's important to take the time to explain what happened, right? You know, often there's seems like magic, right? And you know, you go back and you're fixing things all the time, and customers need to understand what failed, and then it helps going down the road when they're making changes in you know, innovation and making improvements in the system and stuff like that, right? And the funniest one I think is restarting actually does fix most problems. You know, IT, we say that more to clients than anything else. Have you restarted? And it's probably the one thing that we neglect to do the most, right, is to restart. Another thing is, often, I found myself in situations where I'm doing training, where you're showing users how to use something new. And probably a really good tip is, if your hands are on the keyboard and the mouse, you're no longer training, you're fixing. And when you're putting in new systems, it's important to keep track of the two different things, right? While you're trying to fix a problem, you're no longer training. So now you've got a customer standing there watching you fix the system. They're not interested in seeing you fix the system. They want to train and learn the system. So you have to really keep an eye on the time and what's going on. I don't know. I think that's eight. You got eight. That's my eight tips. That's all I got.
What happens is there's a significant number of Microsoft users out there, both sort of people in corporate environments and as consumers and so on. What are some of your recommended Microsoft technologies and why?
Well, the segment of the market I'm in is small business. So a typical client for me is probably 5 to 10 users. My biggest client has about 200 workstations over 6 businesses, so about 30 or 40 per location. Mostly smaller businesses. And I would say probably half those businesses have servers. That's putting in servers has been really dramatic for some of these businesses. When you start to collaborate together with other people in the office, even on something simple like accounting, when you integrate like a point of sale into the accounting and all of a sudden you're no longer manually entering, sales data for the previous day into the accounting system. Those kind of things. Servers is an amazing piece of technology. I remember when we first started putting them in. So, I think, for me, probably my second most favorite technology that's been implemented has been Microsoft Exchange. When I started using Microsoft Exchange, it wasn't considered necessarily the best product. There was communications or email systems out there that purists considered better solutions. But I quite liked Exchange. And for me, I noticed a lot of smaller businesses when they started putting these in, when they really effectively started to use them for, again, collaborating with other people in the business, it really improved things. You can respond to a question and then forget about it. And then when the other person responds back, you can read through the thread and then respond back and arrive at a solution and then implement it. It's a lot better than juggling a whole bunch of concepts and ideas and thoughts in your head. So it improved that stuff. And I think the latest technology that I'm really starting to look at is SharePoint. I think SharePoint is going to be a really big revolution for small business. It's got aspects of it that are very much like social media, and it's very organic in that businesses can adapt it to their needs, right? So I'm starting to work in SharePoint more. I'm really starting to promote it with some clients for in-house solutions, and I think it's going to be maybe not as significant as Microsoft Exchange, but definitely the potential is there. So, you know, but I have to be careful too, because like the first time I worked on Windows 3.0, you know, I was a Lotus and WordPerfect guy, and I was really confused because I'm like, why would anybody want to take their hands off the keyboard? Mice seemed such an inefficient way of inputting information to the computer, but you know, I failed to take into account that, how few of people type. Most people are not typists, so it's not very efficient for them to work on a keyboard. So, I told a friend of mine at the time after working on Windows for the first time, I said, this will never work out. So, you know, I have to be careful.
Now, Mark, in each of your business roles, past and present, can you describe any major challenges you faced and your solutions to the challenges that would be of value to businesses today?
I think probably the biggest challenge has been getting people to adapt to change and innovation. For a long time, computers had a reputation as being unreliable. People have some inherent distrust of technology. Once they have something in place, they tend to remain stuck on the status quo. They don't want things to change. I'm thinking about something I read recently about innovation for an article I was writing, and there's a mentality of I believe they called it keep the lights on, where businesses tend to spend the most money just keeping systems going and are reluctant to look at innovation. I think that's changing. I think as time goes by, young people are more quickly able to adapt to technology changes, and we'll see what happens down the road. I think adapting to innovative change, like innovation, is really a challenge. I think the next thing that's probably been the biggest challenge, probably the second biggest challenge, is learning new technology. Something new comes out, like Windows 8. About half our technicians have upgraded their laptops to Windows 8, or I think even a few have gone to 8.1. And just so that they're familiar and comfortable, so that in the next 6 months to a year, when they go on site to resolve an issue, they don't look stupid, and so they're familiar with the technology. And that's often how we're learning technology. My estimate for people that ask has always been, I spend about probably 30% of my time learning. Often I arrive on site and it's something I have no idea. I don't know what's wrong. I've never worked with this before, and you just have to sit down and utilize the tools that you have. You know, what I arrive with is a skill set and with some knowledge. And that's my advantage, is over somebody that doesn't know anything, you know. And so it's not necessarily knowledge of new technology that it's what I'm bringing to it. But learning new technology can be really, really a challenge, especially with the fast pace of change. Like, we're so busy, it's hard to put, you know, 20 or 30 hours into learning something new. And educating clients is always a challenge as well. You know, technology is sort of that big gray cloud to some users. You know, I had one client once who, watching a mouse move on the screen literally made him ill. Like, he said it upset his stomach to watch the mouse moving around on the screen. So, you know, that presents some unique challenges in educating people on technology, right? So, it's all fear-based, but it's still, it's very challenging. You really have to know your clients and sort of what you can promote and what you feel is going to benefit them. So,
now, what are some future disruptive innovations that business executives should be watching for? I mean, are there any surprises you think are on the horizon outside of things like big data, the cloud, you know, mobile devices and things like that? It's something that maybe people aren't aware of right now.
Well, I think the cloud probably is probably a major shift in technology. Cloud-based technology offers some real advantages, and prices are coming down. Managing a cloud-based solution can offer a huge advantage, particularly since it's very difficult to get skilled professional IT personnel. So, you know, putting in a cloud solution saves you some money in IT. Globalization, I think, is going to be another area. The internet is like a sidewalk for globalization. There's new markets evolving. Suddenly your storefront is 6 billion potential customers, you know, over, right? I don't think we've even touched the potential on this. Countries who have embraced technology are going to lead the way and become global powerhouses, and Canada is one of them. Where I worked probably 12, 14 years ago, there was a small appliance repair business, and we used to go over and help them out and set up their computer on the till and stuff. And, you know, I don't know how many times in your life you've taken an appliance in for repair, but I can tell you I have maybe twice in my life gotten an appliance repaired. And I always thought it was very strange at how many vehicles there were and how busy. And once I was over there on a service call, and they had three people in the back, and all they were doing is they had a website, and people would, you know, put down that they had something broken on their appliance. And because they were in the appliance repair business, they had access to parts catalogs and suppliers, and they could get a discount because they fixed appliances. So they would order parts, repackage them, and then ship them out all over North America. And after a couple of years, they closed up their storefront and they went home-based. And they were keeping probably three or four, five people busy full-time, just processing orders and shipping things out all over North America, you know, and just repackaging it. You know, you buy a switch for a mixer, put it in a box, and ship it out and mark it up, you know, and so a lot of accounting, but, you know, that was really amazing. I think another, you know, disruptive innovation is going to be in education. There's a lot of room for change in education. Data is becoming a commodity, and it requires some education to manipulate and process data. And, you know, educating a workforce is going to create like a whole like a factory for processing data, right? So education is really going to start to, I think, transform things around the world, right? You know, and we're starting to see some innovation in education. Another thing that I start to starting to see is it used to be you had a business and you provided a service or you hired people to complete jobs. But now it seems to be that we're building teams. So you get some people together that work well, you trust them, they have good work ethic, and then it's a matter of now you've got this team, what are they doing? So you're looking for work. So and with the highly mobile workforce and people changing careers and jobs all the time, it seems to be sort of the way things are going. So an example I was thinking of in the back of my mind is you take a manufacturer who doesn't know anything about social media or that, right? So maybe they bring in a firm that has a bunch of people that are very good in that area, and they just radically transform the business, make a lot of changes, you know, take an unprofitable business, become profitable, and then they move on, you know? So that's kind of stuff I can see happening. And I think the internet and technology in general is just going to continue to disrupt things, right? There's people come up with the simplest ideas. You know, people get educated on processes and they develop new systems. And you know, you look at the dot-com boom, and it was created by people who are innovative. And we have multi-billion dollar corporations that have been created from that innovation. So, you know, it's very quickly businesses are evolving and coming out of nowhere and becoming major powerhouses. You know, like Google didn't exist 20 years ago, and it's a huge corporation now, those kind of things. So, and I think things like smartphone technology and internet stuff. My wife has a brand of shoes she uses for work, and there's only two retailers in the Okanagan that carry those shoes. And it was difficult to get there, and she checked online, and she could buy direct from the retailer. It was 20 to 30% cheaper, and that included shipping it to our door. So she never has to leave the house to go get her shoes for work. She can just order them online, and they get delivered to the door, and she saves 20 or 30% over dealing with a retailer. You know, I was looking for a toaster oven recently, and I was in a retail store, and I had my smartphone, and I'm reading reviews and looking at prices around town. And, you know, that's not unusual, but, you know, there was probably 20 people in the store, and I probably was the only one who was pricing things out on my smartphone, right? And reading reviews. And those retailers haven't adapted to that yet. So I think that's going to be the next sort of big revolution too, right? You know, you're going to start to see a service become more important than pricing, because everybody's going to know what you should pay for a toaster or a set of plates. You're going to be able to find everybody's price. It's going to be, you know, there's probably going to be a website somewhere where somebody tells you the cheapest place to buy that. So, you know.
You know, it's an interesting world. Do you find any areas of controversy in the things that you work with?
Wow, tough question. I think, yeah, some things that are difficult right now is maintaining sort of relationships with existing clients. And having to choose to sacrifice relationships with new customers where it's more profitable. You know, there's 8 hours in a day, I feel a loyalty to some of the clients I've worked with for a long time. But, you know, there's so much demand, and you can work anywhere. There's people just crying for good IT, and you sort of have to choose. It's difficult to make some choices. That's what I'm finding is sometimes I'm finding that that's a very difficult thing. I think innovation is another area where maybe there's some controversy. You know, which alludes back to some of the things I was talking about earlier. It's hard to get people to change. And, there's being that we're technicians. I mean, we understand and adapt to technology well, and we embrace innovation. And, some of our clients are not that way. And, so that creates some controversy. I'm finding also it's difficult to spend the time understanding a client's needs as much as I used to. that's difficult. You're just trying to get to the next job sometimes. Sometimes it's very busy. You know, I have a really full day today. I've got a couple meetings and, you know, there's other things that I'm working on that are on the back burner that I wish weren't, that were, you know, so those kind of things. So juggling time is, you know, I think the last thing is just developing some professional standards, you know. Where I work, we've grown rapidly and we're always looking at that. Is, you know, what solutions did somebody put in place? Is that something we all support? How could it have been done better? You know, how do you communicate what you did to me so that we're doing things the same? And how do we allow for innovation within the organization? So you did this first time. I did it the second time. I found something that works a little better. So now we need to change. What do we do about the first client? Do we go back and make changes? Like, you know, just developing some professional standards within the organization is really important. So, but difficult. There's a lot of conflict there. So,
you know, you hear all of this sort of scenarios that are happening in the U.S. You know, with their website on the healthcare side and there's technology being used in critical areas throughout the world. And in fact, everybody's dependent on technology in some way. And it's crucial to the well-being of consumers and of business and of people working and so on. I guess this goes to this whole question of a profession. You know, we have medicine as a profession, accounting, law as a profession because of the concerns about standards. So do you feel computing should be a recognized profession on par with those others, with things like demonstrated professional development, adherence to a code of ethics and a discipline process for those who breach it, personal responsibility, public accountability, some measure of quality assurance or even some provisions for quality assurance and recognized credentials?
Yeah, I think so. We have a lot of highly skilled technicians with little or no knowledge in other areas. We're building complex systems, but not really seeing how it needs to integrate with existing systems. Managing technology and managing change is a completely different skill set. The fact that something can be done doesn't mean it should be. I think of all the companies with these terrible websites that nobody visits or uses. I'm so surprised at how few companies list their business hours, for instance, on websites. That makes so much sense to me. Like, if you're going to have a website, wouldn't you have your hours? And who designed the website and they didn't put down the business hours? That seems so fundamental to me. I can't believe how difficult it is to find a business hours on some websites. We need to, I worked early on in my career, going back 30 years ago. IT was just getting going. There really wasn't too much in the way of servers. I was doing a lot of, you know, small offices, single computer kind of thing. I also worked for an accountant, a chartered accountant, part-time, to help make ends meet. And, they go through a review process. Another accountant comes in and, he goes through your records and your procedure, in the case of an accountant, they go through the records and what have you done and what adjustments have you made. And then gives you an accreditation, you know, your next review's in 1, 2, or 3 years. That's the way it was. And I think that we would benefit from that in our industry. You know, it doesn't have to be a negative experience. It can be a positive one. Somebody outside comes in, looks through your processes and how you're working and, you know, can suggest improvements. You know, I think that's what professionalism's about. If I'm talking to one of the technicians that I work with, it's important that he or she understand that I'm not criticizing them. I may be just criticizing how something was handled. And, so, you know, and that's being professional. You know, that said, I don't take criticism well, and it's something that I've had to learn, get better at, you know, because I do tend to take criticism, poorly. But when I look at it in the light of just learning a better way of doing things, you know, then suddenly it changes for me, right? And it's not personal. It's just, this is the way this was done. This was not done correctly. Here's a better way of doing it. And then adapting. So, you know, it's something that definitely will improve the overall acceptance of IT, is a higher level of professionalism. You know, we have, in our industry, we call them trunk slammers, guys that work out of the trunks of their cars, you know, wannabe ITs or onesies, little one-man operations that run around. And, you know, not always the most professional work is being done. So, you know, and because of that, customers are wary.
Mark, we're down to our last few questions, and this one's about maybe some stories you may have to share from, you know, your travels and your work, maybe something unexpected or amazing or amusing.
Really two things. They're kind of funny stories, I think. Or for me, they were funny at the time. When my wife and I were expecting our first child, we were taking prenatal classes at the local community college. And my wife loves telling people this story because they were having problems with the VCR, and apparently computer technicians are good with all technology. So while they were teaching the class, you know, there was 20 or 30 people in the class, I'm up at the front of the class trying to figure out why the VCR wouldn't play the birthing movie, and not really wanting to fix it, but, you know, I had to fix it. I'm IT. That's what I do. So, and it came down to the video, the cable from the TV to the VCR, was in the wrong jack. So, and, you know, I may have been the only person in the room that could have fixed that. I've always found that was pretty funny, that I'm paying to take a class and I have to fix the technology so that we can have the lesson. The other one that was really funny, and when I just started my business, like a lot of the work was like Lotus 1-2-3 and WordPerfect, which, you know, probably nobody remembers except me. I got a call from a guy that wanted me to come and help install WordPerfect on his computer. And it was when hard drives were first out, so I booked an appointment. I went out, and he had a computer called an Atom 20, I believe it was. It was a kit available, I think, in the 60s or the 70s, and it was beautiful. He had made a box out of plywood. He had burned it with a propane torch and lacquered it. It was a beautiful little computer. It was running something called CPM, and it was had a cassette. That was the media that you loaded applications from. Well, actually, on the operating system, too, because there was no drives. And so he wanted help converting WordPerfect 5.1 on 5 1/4-inch discs onto cassettes so he could load it on his Atom 20. And that really, really amused me. I asked a lot more questions after that before booking and going on site. So,
Mark, this is our last question, and that is, if you were conducting this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
You know what? I don't have a single question, Stephen. All these questions have been really thorough. I don't know. I think just my last comment would be is IT is a lot of fun. It's a really interesting profession, and anybody looking to get into it, I would encourage it. And I would look at it as a profession and developing professionally. It's not just about learning the technology. It's about learning so many different things, you know, and that's it, you know. So I guess if you wanted to ask me a question, how much do I love IT? I absolutely love IT. It's the best career in the world. You know, I can get up in the morning, I can fire up my laptop sitting in my bathrobe in the kitchen, and I can work for a couple hours. I don't know too many jobs where you can do that. So.
Well, Mark, with your demanding schedule, we are indeed fortunate to have you come in to do this interview, and thank you for sharing your experiences with the audience.
Thank you so much for making the time for me as well. I really appreciate it. It's been a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, and again, thanks for to the NPA for the award. I really am deeply touched by it.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Mark Schmid, IT and networking expert, NPA board director, NPA journal publisher, and chief editor.